This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole. They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Bang. All right, great to be back with you, albeit not back in the United States of America. It is Sunday, January 22nd, 2023. It's episode 382 of the Anik and Florian podcast. What's up, my man? Rocking the AF merch.
What's happening, man?
How you doing, bro?
It's great. It's great to be here. Great to be talking about the fights. There's a lot to talk about. Crazy night.
It was a wild night. And you always set me straight in a lot of respects. And I love when I get to talk to you this soon after a pay-per-view. Thank you to everybody for the feedback on the DraftKings deal. Again, more to come on that front. The press release should be released this week. Don't forget, full episodes of the Anik and Florian podcast are yours on DraftKings, clips on the AF channel. But again, we're still working through that navigation. We're going to make every effort to make these episodes as easily accessible as humanly possible. But headlines today, of course, is going to focus on UFC 283, Teixeira versus Hill. Ray Longo coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Ray Longo is going to join us whenever he goddamn well pleases. So Ray Longo will be here soon. And, you know, he was texting me like a mother last night. So he has a lot of thoughts on these fights as well. I just want to say, Ken Flo, to you as a guy who speaks Brazilian Portuguese and who I came to Brazil with so many times, and I leaned on you at all these restaurants and everything else. And as I mentioned, you lived here for a while. The nationalism in this country is just really special. And I know you can speak to this. And I'm not saying this is the perfect place, right? We were advised by the UFC to not even leave the hotel, right? Because there are some inherent dangers, a lot of kidnappings and robberies, whatever, right? But the love that these people have for their fellow fighters, right? For the athletes, for one another. I don't know, man. It's just a special, special thing, the way you embrace these people and the way that they embrace each other. And I know if anyone can speak to that, it's probably somebody like you.
There's no question about it, man. They're extremely passionate about their country, their culture, especially when it comes to sporting events. You know, if you've ever been to a soccer event, you've watched it on television or been there live, you will feel that energy. And Brandon Moreno knows a little bit about that. They can take it a little bit far, but you know, these are people that absolutely will support their Brazilian fighters to the very end. And it's cool to see, man. It's a special place for sure.
Yeah, you want to talk about blind loyalty and unconditional love. It's these Brazilian fight fans, and certainly Moreno experienced it because in large part, a lot of people felt like it was an eye poke that caused the swelling. And obviously, we all know that it was a punch, but a lot to get into on that front. I did sort of say on the broadcast, and I know Cody tweeted about this, but like, I'm not even trying to be funny. Like, why not chant? Like, they did chant for Shogun, like Shogun. What? But dude, like, how about every now and again chant like Maya Genio instead of like, you're going to die to every fucking fighter? Like, it just gets tired, no?
Like they definitely tried to intimidate you as you walk in, you know. Actually, I think was it Jamal Hill as he was walking out, there was one fan that was like telling him, like, you're gonna die. He's like doing the throat slit, talking to him throughout, and Jamal was actually engaging him. I'm like, what are you doing, Jamal? Focus on the fight. But yeah, that, I mean, there's just so many examples of you know, Brazilian fans just going nuts, man. It's hilarious.
Jamal's inner monologue is like, well, Glover might die, but I'm gonna be fine. And he almost did. And let us start there. Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill is the new undisputed UFC light heavyweight champion, 50-44 times three. I hearken back to my first fighter meeting with Jamal Hill, and we talked about his grappling because his striking obviously is what leads the dance. But I asked him about his grappling and he's like, y'all just don't understand. Like, I fucking train with Croyler Gracie. I maul people. You know, he was a purple belt at the time. Now he's a brown belt. But a lot of people wondered how he would handle this physical challenge. A lot of different takedown offerings from Glover Teixeira, a lot of attempts, a lot of different takedown attempts. And Jamahal Hill stuffed 2 of 17 shots. I thought he was very good in transition, urgent when he needed to be. And his striking obviously ruled the day. But we have a new UFC light heavyweight champion. And it's an American athlete who I think is only scratching the surface as to how good he can be.
I agree. I think there's so much potential in that young man. I think, you know, he was certainly vulnerable at times, you know, getting mounted against Glover and stuff like that. But again, it's how you deal with it after you're in that position. And he showed that he does know how to escape against a guy who has the credentials and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt of Glover Teixeira. Now, I think he might be in trouble against a guy who is a wrestler, who is solely focused on keeping him on his back. That will be interesting to see. However, against Glover, I thought he was making the right choices. He was staying patient. He was staying composed, which is exactly what you need to do in those big moments during that fight. And, you know, being in hostile territory, being in a major main event, his first world championship event, and responding in that manner show that this is a guy that's very capable, that's very intelligent. On the feet is really where he was shining, right? But in those tough moments, he showed that he knows how to deal with adversity, and that is going to fuel him and propel him in future fights as well.
He did not have anything that resembled a full training camp for this fight, and I think that's another feather in his cap. You know, he did put down the backwoods about 4 months out, right? But I do think it stands to reason that now he's going to elevate things in terms of his cardiovascular base and all of his other skills. You might have heard us reference sort of energy systems on the broadcast, right? Because there are fighters like Jamahal Hill who maybe don't have the optimal training camp, but they seem to know how to manage energy. And I do believe that the Thiago Santos fight for Jamahal Hill was really good experience for him to have accrued, right? To have that brutal third round in which you're absolutely dominated, you're exhausted back on the stool, and then to have it within yourself to rally and then go finish him in round four. So how did you feel just about the way Jamahal managed his energy and the way he mixed his skills both offensively and defensively?
This, to me, is the most important and most ignored aspect of combat. And it's efficiency. How you manage your efficiency, how well you can execute with just a little bit. While everyone's winging huge punches and trying to do this and do that, being an effective martial artist really comes down to efficiency and managing that energy bar, that fixed energy bar that you have for that fight. This was a 5-round fight, a 25-minute battle. And the way that Jamahal can stay composed, talk his heart rate down, and be efficient and effective with his strikes shows a lot. You know, you see a lot of guys start hot first 2-3 minutes or first 2-3 rounds, and they got nothing in rounds 4 and 5. Jamahal needed every single minute of every single round to win that fight against Glover Teixeira, because Glover was rallying somehow at 43 years old, rallying in that round, in that fifth round, to try to get a finish. I'm just amazed by his heart and the kind of warrior he is. And if Jamahal wasn't efficient, if he wasn't composed, if he didn't know how to manage energy, a less mature fighter, a less skilled fighter, I won't even say that. You could be really skilled, but not be able to do that and lose that fight. Yeah. I think that, to me, is what stands out about Jamahal Hill.
And that's why you're the A side of this podcast, because efficiency was the word that kept eluding me all night. And there you are, saving the day. We did episode 1 of this podcast, and we had Yahoo's Kevin Ioli, and he comes on. We welcome him on. I don't know if you remember this, in 2015. And he's like, thank you guys for having me. Why is it the Anik and Florian podcast and not the Florian and Anik podcast? Like, with respect, John, Kenny fought for the UFC title 3 times, and the Anik and Florian podcast was, I mean, I don't know. I don't
it's because John does all the fucking work is really what it is.
Well, as you well know, though, the Anik and Florian podcast name
was your idea.
Yeah, well, that is true. But the name was actually a placeholder. I remember some early episodes, we were actually soliciting the audience to give us a name for the podcast. And here we are 8 years later, and to whatever degree the Anik and Florian podcast stuck. And one other note I had on the efficiency, just, hey, jab when tired, right? Like, you could tell when he got a little fatigued and just focused on the jab. In terms of the stoppage, right? So I was in Singapore with John Hackelman after Glover Teixeira fought Yuri Prohaska, and I said to Glover, I was like, immediate rematch, no doubt about it. And Glover's like, every day of the week. Hackelman had some pause, just given, I think, the unpredictably violent nature of Jiří Procházka and Glover Teixeira engaging in that rematch at 43 years of age. Obviously, that did not materialize, but John Hackelman has gone through some things with Chuck Liddell. He's concerned about his athletes. And so I knew at the end of round four, because I know Hack so well, that he was going to want to stop this fight. Now, he's not the chief corner. That's for Nelly Feliz Sr. And Hackelman is even deferential to John Nandor, who I believe is the strength and conditioning guy, if I'm not mistaken, right? Maybe he has some other training value as well, right? But so I said that I think if I know John Hackelman the way I do, he's going to try to stop this fight. And then I was able to read his lips and he said, can we stop this fight? And immediately he was sort of talked back from doing that. Now, I'm not going to sit here and suggest that Mark Goddard or any referee is validated to let the fight continue just because Glover Teixeira gets the mount in round five. I do believe there were several times in this fight that Jamahal Hill was a strike or two away from the finish. Any thoughts from you on that? Did you have a problem with the fight continuing? And what were your thoughts on that corner engagement there after round four?
This, to me, is the most interesting angle when we're looking at this fight. John Hackelman has been around this sport for a very long time, both as a fighter and as a coach. He's seen a lot of things inside the cage, outside the cage. And I don't know him that well. I haven't hung out with him that much. But what I get from John is he is as real as it gets, man. And he's not afraid to speak his mind. And when you see the effects on that, when you see the effects that it's had on past fighters, right? It's heartbreaking as a coach to see that. This was my guy. It was my job to protect him and do my best. And you can only do so much, right? You can't go into the cage with your fighter. But when you see these things take effect on certain people that you absolutely care about, it changes your perspective. And I think he's been with Glover since the very beginning. Glover Teixeira was the main sparring partner for Chuck Liddell for many years when no one knew who Glover Teixeira was. And knowing that and seeing that and knowing what Glover has been through, he doesn't want to see that same thing take effect. He's out there as a coach, yes, but also as a friend. And you have to manage that relationship extremely well and know your fighters to say, if I step in here and I stop this fight, he's going to be okay with me, or love him so much that it doesn't matter. If he's pissed off at me, I'll deal with that later. My job is to protect my dude that I love.
Yeah.
And I think that was the thing that was tough for him. It's tough because I think at the end of the day, we are adults. We need to take care of ourselves at a certain point. We can only do so much. And to kind of stop that fire from within that fighter who never wants to quit. It can be tough because Glover had his moments in round five. He had his moments in round five. He could have won that fight. He was in the mount. He was landing some good shots on the feet, all that stuff. So do you want to rob a fighter of a victory as well? It's something that I think will vary fight to fight, corner to corner, and not everybody is going to agree on that. The fighter, other coaches, it's a really tricky thing to manage, John.
So when Glover Teixeira says, I'm too tough for my own good, that is concerning to me because he is intellectualizing it and understanding that it's not good for me to be absorbing this damage at 43 years of age. You know, who's to say he wasn't like half blacked out and doesn't even remember mounting Jamahal Hill, right? Like, yes, I understand that he was able to rally. And so I think for a referee that somehow, you know, maybe validates your decision to allow the fight to continue. I certainly think if this was a non-title fight, it would have been stopped. You know, Ray Longo loves texting me on fight night, and he wrote, come on, John, he's taking triple the damage as Lauren Murphy. Now, these are two different situations, and I don't even think there's a point of comparison to Davis and Figueiredo necessarily either, because Figueiredo's eye was effectively shut. He will not be allowed to continue fighting as a one-eyed fighter, right? But Glover Teixeira, Kenny, you know, He passed the vision test and, the blood, despite the aesthetics, you know, the blood didn't seem to be some major, major factor. So I don't know. I'm sort of talking out of both sides of my mouth a little bit.
No, well, listen, I would say we need to look at a couple things. We definitely need to look at the damage that the fighter is taking, but we also need to look at how the fighter is responding. When we look at Glover, was Glover still Did he have the sense to return fire? Was he being effective with a lot of the fighting techniques that he was executing inside the octagon? Yes. Now yeah. Let's go back to, right? Because that's a main factor. It's not only the damage, but how is the fighter responding to that damage? Lauren Murphy, to me, was not going to find a way to win this fight. She was taking damage, and her skill level was such, and I mean this respectfully, her skill level was such that she wasn't going to win that fight. She doesn't, unfortunately, possess the footwork, the power, or the speed, or some of the techniques to deal with someone like Andrade. So not only was she taking damage, but she wasn't even able to really respond effectively after round one, in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
So to me, it was like one of those things where there's a skill disparity. It's why yeah. the matchmaker in fight promotions are so important. I'm not supposed to put up a white belt against a black belt and see what happens in a grappling event. I need to find someone of comparative and equal skill to see what happens. Sometimes it doesn't always work out that way, right?
Yeah.
But when you see that huge disparity of skill and you see that person taking a lot of damage, that's when you have to go, there's no chance. That's
yeah.
it. There's
yeah.
no chance of this guy pulling it off. Glover had a chance. That to me is the difference.
Yeah, no, beautifully put as usual. And you're right. Glover Teixeira won portions of that fight juxtaposed against Lauren Murphy, who did not win a single exchange or a single 10-second portion of that entire fight. More on that, obviously, coming up later. And for Glover Teixeira, you know, I think if he had won, he would have had one more title defense and obviously the payday that goes with it. But I love the fact that he walks away now. And, you know, some people bemoan the fact that the Brazilian crowd left during the Jamal Hill interview. So he didn't necessarily get his flowers from the crowd when he was giving his final post-fight interview. But for Glover Teixeira, Ken Flo, to be able to realize a UFC championship at the age that he did, you know, power to him, right? I mean, he was going to go down as maybe one of the better fighters, not unlike yourself, to have not realized UFC gold. You know, guy's got a UFC championship belt at home. Now the focus is on Alex Pineda, and he's about as beloved as any fighter in the sport as he exits.
I love that. And I think that's accurate. You know, to go out there and be a world champion in your respective division, you know, in the toughest sport in the world, in the biggest promotion in the world, to pull that off is huge. There's going to be no regrets on his end on what he's
yeah,
accomplished
right.
as a fighter. And to do it in your 40s, dude, that's mind blowing to me. It's inspiring. He has his credentials. He will be in the Hall of Fame in some way, shape or form. And, I think he went out in the right way to go out like that, to show that kind of warrior
yeah.
spirit after that, was awesome. I just hope there's no lasting effects for him moving forward. And it's not just that fight. You look
sure.
at the Prochaska or all, you know, Prochaska fight or all the other fights that he's been a part of. But, you know, to me, yeah, absolutely. He should be applauded, for what he has contributed to the sport, what he's accomplished. I was just blown away by not only his performance inside the octagon, but the class that he showed afterwards as well. That's just one of the best dudes in the sport, period.
And he does still seem sharp as a tack, despite all of the MMA miles accrued and all of the sparring. And you can be sure he's going to be there every step of the way for Alex Pineda, Wellington Turman, and everybody else under that Teixeira MMA and fitness roof there in Danbury, Connecticut. But it is Jamal Hill, the new undisputed UFC light heavyweight champion, 50-44 times three, 10-8s across the board in that fourth round. And as we spin it forward for Jamal Hill, myriad options at 205 pounds. Anthony Lionheart Smith came down here as the backup. He missed weight. I don't know how that affects things. Jamal Hill and Anthony Smith were booked to fight. So even though Anthony Smith is coming off a loss to Magomed Ankalaev, perhaps he'll get a title fight. I think Jamal Hill might have something to say about it. You know, I'm not sure that Magomed Ankalaev necessarily is the promotion's cup of tea, but I would probably go in that direction. And then one other name I would throw out there, and this is not going to happen right now, but I stayed up until 7 o'clock in the morning so that I could congratulate Jamal Hill in the lobby. And he mentioned a fight with Alex Pineda. Now, not now, right? But a lot of people believe Alex Pineda would be favored to beat Jamal Hill despite being the middleweight champion. They're essentially both dude, Jamal Hill's fucking huge, by the way. Huge. Huge hands. Every bit 6'4".
His feet, his hands. I'm like, whoa. Yeah.
Size 15 shoes.
Yeah,
imagine Glover.
I never noticed. I was like, he was about to get in the octagon. I was like, dude, those feet. What the hell? It was crazy. Yeah, anyway.
when he won the game show on Remember the Show here on the Anakin Florian podcast channel with Bilal Muhammad and Jason Anik, Bilal had to like order him special Jordans because they were size 15. So don't have to spend too much time on this, but what do you think in terms of promotionally what they'll do for Jamahal Hill's first title defense? Do you think it will be Anthony Smith, Magomed Ankalaev, or a name I'm forgetting?
You know, it was unfortunate that Anthony Smith didn't make weight. That doesn't bode well for him or give confidence in the organization to say, hey, this is the guy we can rely on for the next title shot. But I think that probably makes the most sense from a promotional perspective, just based on Anthony Smith and his visibility in the UFC as an analyst and you know, a lot of the big fights that he's been in. I think that's probably the direction they'll go to. I think Ankalaev, they can always kind of put in another fight or wait for him to kind of get that next shot. So I imagine it's probably going to be Anthony Smith. I wouldn't be mad at either of those fights. I think Ankalaev is a much tougher fight for Jamahal Hill just based on his skill set. Anthony Smith, I think, would be an interesting fight and most likely where the promotion goes, I would think.
All right, Ray Longo Minute coming up in 60 seconds, but four NFL teams, two conference championship games, and only a few more shots to win big on the playoffs with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. We're all counting it down to Super Bowl 57, except for Longo, I guess, right? But new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. And if you're not a new customer, not to worry. You can feel the conference championship thrills as well with stepped-up same-game parlays. Take your shot at an even bigger NFL payout and boost your winnings with each leg you add up to 100%. So the Philadelphia Eagles absolutely dusted the in-division New York Giants 38-7. The road to the Super Bowl in the NFC goes through the city of brotherly love. And I know a lot of people love the San Francisco 49ers and really like what the Dallas Cowboys did against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But man, it's hard to argue with Philly after putting up a 38-7. AFC going to be interesting as well. We'll see what happens with Patrick Mahomes, but a lot of ways to get in on the action, and you can do it not now, but right now. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use promo code AFPOD. New customers can bet $5 on the conference championships and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code AFPOD. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. All right. Y'all know Ken Flo's a star, but he isn't the star of the show. That's Ray Longo. Let's get to him.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Ray
My
Longo.
Guys.
Hey. Greetings from Rio de Janeiro, Raymond.
I got your answer for what happens the next fight. Peru 05, he becomes a double champ. How's that?
Oh my God.
How's that for matchmaking?
What here's the thing, he could actually pull that off.
He, Kenny, he's the 100% the favorite in that fight.
He's a beast, man.
Yeah, he's a beast. He moves
I'd
up
imagine,
to
205. I'd imagine making 185, a guy that big, it must be tiring and brutal to make that weight. At 205, I bet he's comfortable, strong, fast, probably feeling better than he is at 185.
Without a doubt. That's a crazy fight. I mean, and that's a winnable fight for Pereira, which is insane. He becomes the double champ with the least amount of fights ever in UFC history. How's that?
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm going to kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
I guess
that's
you guys
crazy.
Get excited.
No,
about
I like it. And I like you bringing it. And hey, I don't know if you heard if you were on, but I talked to Jamahal Hill last night and he mentioned the name Alex Pineda in the lobby last night after the win. Not that would be his first title defense. And let's also not forget, I think you guys bring up a good point in terms of Alex Pineda maybe not playing the long game at 185 pounds. I mean, he's much bigger than Glover Teixeira, right? So I do think eventually he's going to move up to light heavyweight, but he has yet to defend the middleweight title. And the Adesanya rematch is lurking. Robert Whittaker could get the inside track if Izzy's not ready. And that belt could be on the line as soon as April. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to be now for Jamal Hill and Alex Pineda, but I do think there are legs for that matchup. All right, before we get back into UFC 283, Raymond, main event, Merab Dvalishvili.
Whoa.
Fighting Piotr Jan. I mean, you just can't stop preparing for this Piotr Jan. You just can't fucking get rid of this guy, you know?
Yeah, what a huge platform for Merab. I love the five-round fight. You know, he deserves it. He's done what he had to do to get this fight. And I think, I think that's fireworks, man. That's not an easy fight. That's going to be a really, really tough fight. So I like the five rounds, though. I always wanted to see Merab in a five-rounder just putting that pressure on. So,
right.
You know, we'll see. Aljo was actually in this weekend, so we were talking about it. But, yeah, it's you know, at least he's got, you know, his best friend and training partner knows him very well. I think that's a big plus. There's a couple of things, but really, I mean, that's a great fight. I mean, just whatever, for whatever reason, for a lot of reasons.
Great fight.
Yeah, great fight.
So, Ray, you texted me during the main event. And you said, come on, John, he's taking triple the damage Lauren Murphy did. So talk to me about the UFC light heavyweight championship fight and ultimately your thoughts, despite John Hackelman's wishes that the fight did continue after that brutal round four.
Yeah, my point was I was being a devil's advocate. I'm not an early fight stopper. I've got grown to be, you know, but, you know, from, you know, where I came from, that really wasn't ever kind of an option, right, Kenny? Back in the day, that was, you know, so we're getting smart.
He's not dead yet. Keep going.
Yeah, we're evolving. I was telling somebody the other day, you got knocked out in the boxing gym. You were in there the next day. They wanted to see if you could tough it out. And that was a fact. That was happening. That would never happen today. Me personally, I would never ever do it. I'm there to protect the people. But my point was, he took more damage than Lauren Murphy from a big guy. You got two big guys. One guy's 43 years old. I don't think that was the issue to me. You know, is it the damage, or was it the fact that we didn't think Lauren Murphy could win that fight at any cost? And we still look up until that last second, I thought Glover could win the fight. I mean, you were going like, holy crow, he's going to win the fight. He got the fight down with 4 minutes to go. Like, this is crazy. So I don't know if it was that, it was the competitiveness, or is it the amount of damage? That was kind of where I was going. I was just looking to provoke a conversation. Nothing crazy. I'm glad.
Okay, got it.
You know, I'm glad. You know, I'm not glad, but I'm glad Glover got to go out the way he did. It definitely wasn't a Shogun Rua. That guy fought his freaking balls off. Could have won that fight a couple of times. Maybe not, because Jamal did it. Listen, I don't want to make the story about Glover either, but when you fight a guy like Glover, that's what happens. He is the story. But Jamal Hill did a fantastic job. And as much as I wanted Glover to win, I did pick Jamal Hill to win because I thought his boxing was going to be on point. But, man, did Glover – man, he just 43. Like, you never know, when is that last fight? When is that – when can't you do it anymore? So, there's so much to unpack with that. But the fact that he – understood he was too tough for his own good and he got out of there. I love this guy. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I just hope he's okay, because this is a good individual. This is a salt of the earth, solid guy who's great for that community up there, doing what he loves to do. So I don't want to see him get hurt, but I am glad he went out the way he wanted to go out. And again, it's a big difference than the way Ruha went out, you know? And,
I
don't know. Like, again, John, there were times in that fight I really thought he was going to submit him, or he's going to go for, you know, whatever. You know, it just had the intensity of a great fight. It was a great fight.
Yeah. And I know, like, Ken Flo's fight with – like, Kenny's fight with Sean Sherk was very bloody, and there were some other wars, but, like, Kenny never absorbed even remotely that much damage in a fight, concussive damage, right, Kenny? I mean, like, not even fucking close in any of your fights.
Huh? Where are we? Who are you guys? What's going on?
Yes.
What? Huh?
Wait, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? What are you talking about, John? I never even
we like chickens and windmills. Yeah. What are we talking about?
You're talking about soccer? My soccer?
Never got hit in my life. Never got hit in my life. Crazy.
I'll tell you, but you played soccer in college, right?
I did. Brutal. Brutal. I brutally beaten in the soccer.
Were you allowed to do the headers with the ball?
I was. I had a big head. I never missed.
If you want to listen, I don't want to turn this down negative street, but if you want to listen to something bad about concussions, it was about a soccer player and the guy, the CTE from, he was a famous soccer guy in England. It's just, it didn't end up well. It was a horrible story, but it does, that's what I say. These, everything carries its own issues with it, but Glover, you can't say enough about. I was excited for him, and I just hope he's okay, because again, he is a great guy and he doesn't deserve to get banged up like that at all. So
yeah. Well, my daughter Riley is no Kenny Florian on the soccer pitch, but she is on two teams. And when I was in Rio, right, one of the bullies on this other team stepped on Riley's toe. And, Riley is my kid who's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. She's pretty dramatic, a little bit of a hypochondriac like her father. So I'm in Rio and she's like, "Daddy, I think my toe's broken. I can barely walk up the stairs." And my wife's like, "Yeah, okay, Riley, right?" So sure as shit, right? Displaced fracture of the big toe. She's in a boot for 6 weeks and she's going to miss the whole season. So just a lesson to you parents out there, even if you think your kids are soft, sometimes they might actually break a bone.
Yeah, right.
So much to get into today. I feel like we're already chasing the clock, and we will have an extended UFC 283 recap coming up later this week. Brian Petrie is going to join us. We'll probably be joined by Santino DeFranco as well. But I want to transition to the flyweight championship if I could. And Ray, we'll start with you on this. Brandon Moreno gets a second finish in this fourth and final meeting against Davison Figueiredo. And there's nothing to talk about now as far as who's the better man in this equation. Daniel has said repeatedly, Daniel Cormier, that Moreno's just a terrible matchup for Davison Figueiredo. But Brandon Moreno beat the best flyweight version of Davison Figueiredo this night. He finished him. And the series definitely goes to Brandon. Raymond, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, those guys, unfortunately, they could fight 10 times and who knows, it's just going to be a great fight every time. But look, Moreno made the changes, right? I love the way he implemented the takedowns right at the beginning. You could see that this fight, he fought with his brains and not with emotion. I think he even referenced that somewhere, but man, was he cold and calculated. And I think that was the difference. And he probably could have did that in every fight, but I think he let emotions get the best of him, and he was swinging like a lunatic half the times. And that was, I don't know. So he did, I thought he was smart, game plan, fight IQ off the charts. Wait a minute. We have a guy now that thinks he's part of the podcast. This is a problem, no?
Let's go. Coach, we got some work to do.
We got some work to do. He's waiting to go. He wants to watch football. He's mad at me for doing this right now.
I got some playoff football, but, we're here getting that work in.
Hey, we wish your Buffalo Bills all the best. Hey, Matty, you're the biggest power slap fan in the world, I've heard. Is that true?
Oh, man. No, I can't watch it. I can't watch it.
No, I'm out. I'm out as well, man.
Yeah, I'm out.
It's just traumatic brain injury. That's all it is. No,
you can't defend yourself. That's where I'm out. You can't defend yourself.
That's not cool. It's nothing, like we were talking before, like, oh, what are they going to do next? They're going to have like knife fights. And then I'm like, at least if they could defend themselves, I'll watch it if they could wax on, wax off. But
we're going to go up two stories and we're going to push each other off.
And then the guy still survives. Yeah,
but we give the guy an elevator ride back up, though, Kenny. He doesn't have to walk up the stairs. We elevate him back up so he can push the other guy off. I mean, I'm going to say this, and I'm just saying I don't mean anything specifically by this, but I did watch it, and these were my thoughts, and I'm saying I love everybody. This is not has nothing to do with it, but when I saw Dr. Davidson there, I just go, man, it just cheapens what he does. And then the other guy that I love, and I love Davidson, I love Herzog. I'm like, I just thought it had such a negative effect on guys that I really looked up to. I don't know, again, I don't mean anything by it. I'm just saying what I felt when I was looking at it. I go, wow, I can't believe that, And then
You know what I equate it to? There's NASCAR, there's F1, there's Le Mans and all that stuff. It's like there's racing, but it'd be like me going and start like, hey, I'm going to start a car accident championship. It's like these guys, the professional racing, which is dangerous. Fighting is dangerous, right? But at least they can defend themselves. But having something that's just going to be reduced down to just like car accidents, just like two cars slamming into each other. It's not cool to me.
But yeah, because yeah. Even like Hunter Campbell, I've never met the guy, but they tell me he's a super intelligent, smart guy. I'm having a hard time with that now.
He's smart. It's a money grab.
Don't get why you would attach yourself. There's no way this is making it. And I'm not wishing any, look, people can do what they want to do. I'm not getting down on anybody. I'm just saying I can't see how that makes it at all. Yeah. There can't be anybody that would pay for a pay-per-view for that, can there? Right or wrong? I don't know. But I don't want to make it about
power. I mean, and we have said – we have plenty of UFC 283 stuff to do. I was just sort of joking around with Frivola because he had pushed out a tweet understanding why this is all going on. And I do think, though, you bring up a good point right when I see my good friend Jason Herzog and his association with this. Like, it's just the fact that the Nevada State Athletic, I don't know. I don't want to get into it. I want to get into it.
Skip it, because I'm telling you, it will go down negative street real quick.
It's not going to do me any favors with anyone. But Brandon Moreno is the undisputed UFC flyweight champion. All right, Maddie, all the best, buddy. Best to your wife. Brandon Moreno.
Unbelievable. Bad.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I went over last Sunday after the podcast. She's an amazing person. She looked fantastic. That's great awesome. Spirits, everything. Just made me feel good just seeing her feel good. It was just amazing to me. Yeah. Amazing, that's all I can say.
All right, so Davison Figueroa is going to move up to 135 pounds. Kenny, it looks like Alexandre Pantoja, who does have a couple of head-to-head wins over Brandon Moreno. I think one of those is an exhibition. But Pantoja, I guess, got pretty testy with Moreno backstage. All indications are, though, Pantoja's been biding his time for a while. That's going to be the next flyweight title fight.
Yeah, and he's doing everything possible to try to secure that opportunity against Moreno. Listen, I kind of want to go back to the fight a little bit because I thought it was a fantastic fight. Excellent performance from Moreno. Ray was talking about the emotional connection to the fight, and I think he's spot on. If you go to Moreno in his last fight, so the fight previous to this one, he was walking out, and I always think this doesn't bode well for a fighter. When they're coming out and they're like, I'm the best, I'm the champ, I'm going to do this. Well, it's like, don't say that. If you don't really believe that, you kind of have to say those things, I think. It's like me being like, I'm a man, I have a maroon shirt on, I have a beard, I have dark hair. You'd be like, this is a crazy person right here. Right. So I think he came out way more calm and composed. He didn't have to pump himself up because he was genuinely confident heading into that fight. And man, did he execute. He allowed Davison to kind of come forward, used his aggression against him, hitting some crucial takedowns, landed some good ground and pound, got good position. And of course, landed that nice left hook there that landed on his eye, which, compromised Figueredo moving forward. I think Moreno Pantoja is a great fight. I'm really interested in that. I think Moreno's still a completely different guy, and I think there might be a different result. I would love to see that. And for Figueredo, I think he's making the right decision in moving up at 145 pounds because 135 pounds, sorry, because he never quite looks so comfortable at 125 pounds. It's like, I could have fought at 145. Am I going to be at my best at 145? Definitely not. So I think that was the right move, especially moving forward as he's getting older. And I still think he'll be fantastic at that weight class. I don't know if he's going to be a champion in that stacked weight class, but I think he's going to give a lot of people trouble and he's going to be as dangerous as ever.
Brandon Moreno knows himself really well at 29 years of age, and you guys hit on a lot of truths there. I have on my fighter card, he admitted to being emotional, bordering on angry, like in that third meeting with Davison Figueroa. And obviously, he kept all of that out of the equation. And such a good dude. And to have to navigate that post-fight circumstance, I like the way he still was able to put Mexico over and dodging popcorn and beers on the way out. Just a crazy fucking scene.
Yeah, that was
real.
Nuts.
Good to be back here, though. It really has been.
And John, just let me interrupt.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Just thinking of emotions again. That's what the first thing I would address with Marab is the same thing because, you have the Georgian thing, the Russian thing. He's got to keep that out of the equation. It's very, very strong. We might not understand it as Americans, but that's a very, very strong emotion right there. And that's the only thing that worries me. That's the first thing I would work on even before technique at that point, is that you have to stay within yourself. Now, you can't go berserk because that against a guy like that, that's not a good thing to do.
Yeah. All right, we continue with our UFC 283 recap, and a lot of our prelim conversation on the Bonfim brothers is going to happen later in the week. We wanted to give the champions a lot of shine today. We might actually have to get some from Longo on the Bonfim brothers before we get out of here, but I got to talk about Gilbert Gerenio Burns, my teammate at the Institute of Human Performance. Couldn't get a fight after the Khamzat Chimaev fight last April. Jorge Masvidal turned him down three times. He also alleges that Bilal Muhammad turned him down, even though Bilal wasn't given necessarily 8 or 12 weeks to prepare. But Gilbert Burns is one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. Wouldn't he have to be, right? He's undersized for this division. He gave up like a foot in fucking reach. The Magny camp loved this matchup for them. And Gilbert Burns backs up everything he said all week. He said, I have to finish Neil Magny. I have to make a statement. If I'm in my zone in a flow state, this fight doesn't last 10 minutes. And Ray Longo, it didn't last 5.
Right. Look, I love a guy that I don't think he was like saying anything braggadocio. I love a guy that backs up what he says. Kenny, you got to love this guy. His jiu-jitsu is off the hook. You know, Magny's no slouch to run through like that. And he ran through him. I think he did make the statement he needed. Another guy that you got to love when you talk to him. And, man, I'm waiting to see what hope. He's got a lot of good fights ahead of him. The Covington fight would be fantastic, the guy he called out. So, yeah.
Yeah, no question about it. I think that was the fight that he needed to prove to himself, more importantly, that he's of a different quality than Neil Magny, who is a very good fighter,
without a doubt.
Just not really at that elite level. Gilbert Burns had to show that, hey, listen, I can be a champion in this sport. And that's one of the few instances where you're coming off of a loss where you actually ride even higher off of confidence, where, you know, Khamzat Chimaev, who is probably a decent sized 185 pounder, skillful everywhere. And he still made it an absolute war. And he said, wait a sec. I can do this. I can beat the boogeyman here. I had my chance. And, you know, even you look at what he did in against Kamaru in that first round. So I think he did the right thing, performed brilliantly, no mistakes, didn't take any damage. That's just a clean performance. That's what every fighter wants right there. So awesome for him to get that and especially do it in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, there's guys that talk and you don't believe them. When he said that, I kind of said this fight's not going 10 minutes. So I got a lot of faith in Gilbert Burns. And again, I think he needed that for his head. His confidence is at an all-time high at this point. Look, the Chimaev fight that ain't a blemish at all. I mean, he was put in there not even to last 20 seconds. And I bet you that fight goes totally different if they fight again, especially if you make it a 5-round fight.
You guys do make some good points, right? Because even though Gilbert Burns at 36 years old is not going to be cutting down to lightweight, and I know it was hard for him even when he was younger, right? But yeah, you think about him as sort of like a tweener 160-pound fighter fighting Khamzat Chimaev, essentially a middleweight. It's just crazy how competitive he was. A lot of people didn't even know who had won that fight necessarily after 15 minutes. But we'll see if it'll be Gilbert Burns and Colby Covington. Got to think Gilbert's next opponent is either going to be Colby or Bilal Muhammad, but I think he's wise to call for the bigger fight, which is Colby Covington, with all respect to our guy Bilal Muhammad, who is firmly in that mix. But congratulations to one of the best guys in the game, Gilbert Gerenio Burns. All right,
100%.
I want to quickly get to Jessica Andrade and Lauren Murphy, because Jessica Andrade, I just have so much respect for this lady. And our Hall of Fame voting body is one man. It's UFC President Dana White. But if I was ever to request a sit down with Dana to advocate the candidacy for a fighter to get into the Hall of Fame, it'll either be Rafael Dos Anjos or Jessica Andrade. And I don't even think I'm going to have to advocate for Andrade. She's tied with Amanda Nunes for the most wins in UFC women's history with 15. She's done it like Henflo across 3 different weight classes. She chews up and fucking spits out anybody in the top 5 that isn't a champion. Like, I don't know. Like, she, Kenny, I have so much respect for this woman and this skill set and everything she does. She didn't even have her head coach, and just destroys Lauren Murphy to add another chapter to her already appreciable legacy.
She's a beast, man. She really is extremely dangerous. It's rare that when you get someone at that weight class, man or woman, who can hit as hard as she does. She's a devastating puncher. She's extremely powerful. She's tough. She's committed. She's evolved a great deal over the course of her career. And Lauren Murphy's a good fighter. She just had way too many weapons, way too much power, way too much athleticism. And this isn't the first time. She does this repeatedly in that division. So I thought it was a fantastic win for her.
Yeah, it looks like she could do this for another 10 years, to be honest with you. She looks fresh. She spoke well. I don't think she's absorbed a lot of damage. I'd love to see what she said. I'd love to see bring the Whaley back to Brazil and fight in Brazil. I think that's a totally different fight. I think everybody would love to see that fight, and that's about it. But look, let's give Laura Murphy a credit. I mean, she's got the grit of a champion. I mean, she wasn't going to be denied. She was fighting till the end. Yeah, you can make a case for stopping it, but and again, I know we get into these things. You don't want to say, well, the person's got a good chin, and that's a good thing. But she was in there. She was still swinging. You know, I think that was the difference. But you could see she was a step behind with the speed, and I think the speed and power combined was a problem for her. But hats off to Laura Murphy for really, really just sucking it up and making it through that fight.
We all know what the case is for stopping the fight, Ray, but what's the case for not stopping it because Lauren is still throwing? I mean, isn't that a lot of muscle memory? Like, she didn't win a second of that fight, and I'm paid to do a job, right? Yeah. And this whole notion of a moral victory, right, is the reason to keep her in that fight so she doesn't get finished and goes the distance with an all-timer like Andrade? Is that what we're trying to do as a coach?
No. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just giving it up to her for having grit. I mean, I'm just saying that's the fight should have been stopped. And, you know, it goes back to the Glover thing. Glover always had a chance of winning that fight at any time because he can hit hard and he has great submissions and a ground game. Lauren never got the fight to the floor. If she did, you know, the girl got right back up again. So it left out the intrigue of you're almost just hoping for a Hail Mary. I think because, she's such a nice person. You just want to see it do good. So there's emotion. There's a lot involved, but I'm with you 100%, John. I'm not even, I'm really with you. I'm just was adding another shine to it.
No, of course.
Saying she was gritty, you know.
Joe and Lauren Murphy are two of my favorite people in MMA. Yeah. I consider Sean Madden to be a friend, right? But I mean, I had a confrontation with a coach here even in Rio. Like, even if my public approval rating is a little bit higher than it was in 2012, there's always issues with fighters and coaches, but I can't worry about that. I have to have thick skin. I have to call it like I see it. I just didn't need to see any more of that after round two, you can be sure. But real quickly, Ken Flo, as far as Andrade and Zhang Weili, looks like Valentina Shevchenko is going to defend her belt against Alexa Grasso. I know there is a groundswell of momentum potentially for a super fight between Valentina Shevchenko and Amanda Nunes or Valentina Shevchenko and Zhang Weili. But let us not forget, Jessica Andrade in 2019 slams her way to the title. And then 3 months later, she goes to Shenzhen, China and defends the belt against Zhang Weili to be a good soldier on UFC Fight Pass, right? No pay-per-view points, not on television. Fight Zhang Weili on the fucking internet like a few weeks after winning the title. So to me, to Ray's point, if ever an athlete deserves to have this reciprocated and have that title fight in Brazil, it's Andrade.
Yeah, listen, you didn't even have to say that stuff, and I would say she deserves it. I had no idea about that. That just adds more fuel and gives her that much more of a push to get that next shot. But I think that makes sense. That would be fair to give her that second shot given the circumstances of the last time.
Ray, you got to go here in a minute, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I just quickly get your thoughts on Jose Aldo being inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame?
I'm going to have two thoughts on this. My first thought is that I really believe that's what they should have did for Shogun Hua. That would have been a nice retirement. Show his highlights. Forget the fight. And if you're going to give the guy a fight, you make him the favorite against somebody. You don't give him a fight where he's the underdog and he's 45 years old. I don't get that. Like, what's Ray, the point of that? Go ahead.
Well, Ihor Poterya, if you look at the UFC's light heavyweight division, you can argue he's one of the lowest ranked fighters in that division, right? I think Brian Petrie acknowledged on our podcast last week that he had maybe one win over a fighter above 500 when he got signed by the UFC. Like, you're right. Poterya was a 2-1 favorite. Right. You're just thinking maybe somebody long in the tooth that I'm not thinking of that maybe would have provided a more level playing field. I don't know. Yeah, I think they were kind of trying to get him a competitive fight. I don't know.
All right. But anyway, so that's that. But the Jose Aldo, come on, man. That had to bring a tear to your eye. Here's a guy, and Kenny shared the octagon with him, which is amazing because this is a guy that's been around forever. that people did look up to. If you wanted to see devastating leg kicks, that's the guy you look for. If you wanted to see crazy knees, takedown defense, he was the guy. So, and again, another really nice guy, you know, that really deserves this more than anybody. But man, does his body of work speak for itself? Crazy. So that was a great moment. That's the way I like to see, even though it was a Hall of Fame and not a retirement, I'd rather see him shift to that where you show all those highlights.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get people talking for 5 or 10 minutes and that's it. Call it a day. I don't want to see guys going out like that. It means, you know, because we start rationalizing, you know, well, at least he got the fight again. And even DC, like, we got to see him again. I disagree with that. And I don't want to, you know, my thing with DC, I don't want to disagree with anything.
No, I get it.
I mean, John, you think if you actually tried to shove him, you could move him more than like a 16th of an inch? Really, Kenny, the guy's arms are busting out of his suit. I'm like, this guy's a house. He's a house. He's a fucking house, this guy. What do you do with him, Kenny?
Yeah.
And the guy knows what he's doing.
Fire hydrant.
If that guy grabs you, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You think you're surviving?
Well, Kenny taught him.
Kenny taught him. You have to ask him to let go of you.
Yeah.
No, listen, could I chime in about Jose Aldo? Yeah. Or are we going to say goodbye to Ray Ray? You got to go hold.
No, chime in about Jose and then I'm out of here.
I was going to say this, and I'm sure Ray would agree with this. You know, it's like, I don't care what organization, I don't care if you're fighting over an LFA or some small organization. If you are undefeated in this sport for 10 years, you're a G. That should be like, wow. I don't care. That's impressive. No mistakes. You perfect for 10 years. Congratulations. And, that's amazing.
Kenny, you're a G, but he wasn't just undefeated. He was dismantling a lot of people.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So you have that. He was a world champion in this sport. He was an innovator. He was athletically superior to pretty much everybody out there. So he was doing things that other people just weren't doing. Like, people are learning from him. If you were just one of those things, you would be impressive.
Right.
He was all of those things.
And he carried a division that the UFC didn't even want. He carried that freaking division. He brought light to that division. So all these bantamweights and, you know, featherweight, they owe it to Jose Aldo. He trailblazed that whole thing for those guys. And, man, did he do a great job of it.
You could also argue, I know this is a little bit of a push, because Conor McGregor is a special individual who carries a lot of charisma and skill. But would Conor McGregor be Conor McGregor if he didn't have that win over Jose Aldo?
You know, it's like
he gave that push to Conor McGregor. So, yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I agree with you 100%.
Had won 18 consecutive fights going into that meeting with Conor McGregor that, of course, lasted just 13 seconds.
A lot of guys don't get 18 fights in the UFC. Yeah, this guy won 18 fights in a row.
I got to say, too, Ray, and we'll let you go, but our coordinating producer, Zach Candido, does listen to this podcast, and I think you might even have his wheels churning in terms of the Shogun Hall of Fame stuff, right? Because I think it's a little bit of a tricky navigation with the Hall of Fame when you get in for a fight. Diego Sanchez gets in for his fight with Clay Guida. Dan Henderson and Shogun Hua get in for their fight against each other. But I could sit here until I'm blue in the face and make modern era or pioneer era arguments to get into the Hall of Fame on their own individual merits for Shogun Hua, Dan Henderson, and Diego Sanchez. So I think that actually is a good idea, right? Like, as Shogun Hua is retiring last night, you know, you do all the bells and whistles and you put him into the Hall of Fame. That would have been amazing.
No, that's the way to go, John. Trust me, as a fan and a guy involved in the sport, I loved what they did for Jose Aldo. I thought it was his retirement, which it shouldn't be, but it was a great thing. That's where I came. What a great thing if they would have did that, Shogun. And pay him his money. Give him his money for the fight.
Yeah.
That's the way you go out in this organization. We have the money. We're going to put on a big spectacle for you with the highlights and interview people. Put it on. It brings a tear to people's eyes. Look what Jose Aldo Hall of Fame guy's crying like a baby because of the excitement and just the joy of what that brought him. That's the way to go, Zach Candido. I promise you.
Yeah. Ray Longo, thank you so much. I know we sort of tweaked the time on you today, but you're an absolute soldier. And I always appreciate those texts on Fight Night. You have no idea. No, so thank you, man.
You know, I love you guys and I would do anything for you, but I got a bunch of maniacs looking through a window now trying to get me out of here.
Get out of here. Thank you.
This is why this team wins, because it's Sunday and people should be home, but we're down here fucking grinding. Watch out for Nas on the 18th, baby. We're bringing it. I'll talk to you later.
Let's go. There he is. Look at fucking Ray Longo. I mean, that's how you outro yourself, Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anik and Florian podcast. So later this week, we will talk about Ismael and Gabriel Bonfim, Bruno Fajeda on short notice, stepping in for Brad Tavares, and he knocks out Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez. A lot of great prelim performers. Jailton Almeida, of course. I want to get your thoughts on Johnny Walker over Paul Craig before we get to our final thoughts. These guys were entrusted with this main card pay-per-view opening slot. You knew it was probably going to be a quick fight one way or the other. But I think for Paul Craig, I have a lot of respect for the skill set, but, you know, a little bit of it is kill or be killed. And, I don't know, just all of a sudden he went from having all this momentum and head-to-head wins against Jamal Hill and Magomed Ankalaev. And now it's two successive losses and he's not really in the mix at all. I want to talk about Johnny Walker, but overall thoughts on those two, that fight and where they might stack up in the division now.
John, that last fight with Paul Craig, this highlights the importance of defense. It doesn't matter how dangerous you are in one area. If you could be killed easily, then you're doing it wrong. And I think that for Paul Craig, that's why we see these, you know, highs and lows in his career, where he's either submitting you with something just fantastic, or he's getting knocked out with something fantastic. And, that came with Johnny Walker. He stayed a little bit too close on that single leg. He wasn't mobile on that single leg. He wasn't really off balancing Johnny Walker too much. Johnny Walker's too powerful, too big, too dangerous to allow him any free shots. Yeah. And once he ate that first one, man, it was all downhill for him. So unfortunate. But on the other side of things, I think it was cool to see Johnny Walker fighting with way more confidence. It seems like he's been working hard on his game. He hasn't had perfect performances all the time, but it seems like he's settling into a point in his career where he's kind of shored up some of those vulnerability. He's not a perfect fighter yet, but I thought that was a really good performance for him against a guy who is dangerous. So I thought he took advantage of that spot extremely well.
Man, you just have such a way analytically, right? Confidence. I mean, that's it, right? That's the difference. That's the difference for me and Johnny Walker. And I do think that he was a victim of expectation early on a little bit, right? Started 3-0 in the UFC with those three first round knockouts, bonuses, you know. And then I think some of the setbacks against Thiago Santos and Jamal Hill, I think, really helped him. There were some injuries, right? The shoulder surgery after the celebration. Then he breaks his foot in the Thiago Santos fight. Then he gets knocked out hard by Jamal Hill. He's a near 2-1 underdog against Iwan Cutelaba, beats him. And now he's won 2 in a row. And I got to say, man, like, great athlete, mentally and physically strong, tremendous frame, you can argue, for two divisions, wildly popular in Brazil. A lot of the locals were saying, you know, Shogun Hua gets announced at the ceremonial weigh-in. And it just goes to show you that this fan base does turn over every 3 or 4 years, because Shogun didn't get nearly the pop that Johnny Walker did. And we talk a lot about Jailton Almeida and his potential in two divisions. Johnny Walker, to me, Kenny, would seem to have a lot of potential at 205 right now and eventually maybe even heavyweight before he retires.
No question about it. I'd imagine it's probably difficult for him to get down to 205 pounds. That's quite the frame. He can put on even more muscle. Obviously, extremely physically gifted. I wouldn't be surprised to see him fight at heavyweight in the future.
All right, a lot more coming up later in the week on UFC 283 at Anik Florian Pod on social media. If there is any topic that you would like us to dive further into later in the week during our second episode. But before we get on out of here, I would like to call on the executive producer of the Anik and Florian podcast, Cody Merrow. And before we get to your Merrow seconds, I just would like to acknowledge you publicly for all of your help with our transition. I know you've been essentially doing this 40 hours a week for the last 2 weeks to sort of help us navigate this. So just wanted to publicly thank you before you get to all the fucking shit that we missed over the last hour. So,
well, thanks. Hey, anything for the fans, you know, the fans are what we do this for. So that's what we're trying to feed back to. So one thing, just I have some other notes, but Kenny, can you imagine a Jamal Hill versus Johnny Walker title fight? Like, wouldn't that just be insane?
It would. I think that'd be very interesting. Johnny Walker's got some work to do, but I think he can.
They fought 11 months ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think get back. Yeah.
Right. Well, they
that was a brutal knockout.
Well, the promo.
Remember, it's like Timber. Yeah.
Everything. Oh, yeah. So UFC 283 was the first UFC event back in Brazil with a crowd since November 2019. John, you weren't on that call. If my research is correct, your last time in Brazil was May 11th, 2019 for Andrade versus Namajunas, right?
Yes, right. The last time we had fans in Brazil, yeah, UFC 237. Yep.
Yeah, so at that fight, so since then, Jessica's fought seven times. So that gives you kind of the sense for yourself, like when the last time you were in Brazil with the crowd was. So just what were your thoughts on the crowd? Just final notes there.
Yeah, I'm glad you're giving me a chance to sound off on this. And by the way, Andrade, in terms of the activity, I will say 2022, the only year since she signed with the UFC in which she hasn't competed at least twice. So look for a busy 2023 for Jessica Andrade. But no, you know, there was a time in my life, as Kenny knows, that I was going to Brazil six times a year to these remote locations, Jaraguá do Sul, traveling from Las Vegas, away from my family, non-air-conditioned venues, main cards at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I couldn't get back to the States fast enough, but have this little breather to come back to Rio for this pay-per-view with this backdrop and this setting. It was absolutely incredible. I've never been this excited to come to Brazil. Not that I'm not excited to get back to the U.S. tomorrow, but no, I mean, it was absolutely insane. Them stomping their feet and creating all of this noise. I mean, they really do unite as one underneath that roof. And yeah, it was a special night.
And how's that Brazilian acai, dude? It's totally different in Rio than or Brazil than it is in the States, right? It's dude, delicious.
I am going to be done with you guys in 5 minutes. I'm going to go do some recreational drugs with Bruce Buffer, and then I'm going to go get some acai. Everything's different about it. And I live in Florida, Kenny, right? And I know you experienced some pretty good acai in California. I live in Florida, yeah, where actually a lot of Brazilians try very hard,
right,
to do acai not well. And it's not the same at all. The consistency, the color, not even close. So yes, we are off to get some.
Can you bring
acai.
Some back? Can you bring some back in the suitcase? Is that going to melt everywhere all over your suit? Just bring
I
some
think
back,
that would
bro.
Be,
Florian.
It'll probably mesh nicely with Glover's blood all over my green suit. But yeah. What else you got, Cody?
Well, and way to blow the news on the fact that the three of us and Bruce are opening up a dispensary / acai shop in Boca Raton, Florida. So way to break the press release there, John. Thanks. So continued notes, fight of the night was Jamahal Hill and Glover Teixeira. Also Ismael Bonfim and Jailton Almeida. You said you're going to get more Bonfim later in the week, so I won't go into anything more there.
So Ismael Bonfim obviously got the bonus, but Gabriel did not.
Correct, on the record at least.
Yeah. So, yeah, discretionarily, obviously, Gabriel Bonfim is going to be taken care of. A little surprised to see Jailton Almeida get a bonus, but good on him nonetheless.
So more notes, just one last note on Andrade. 231 significant strikes for her is a UFC flyweight record. It was the second largest for a three-round fight behind Diaz versus Cerrone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so
She's awesome.
I also believe, per the notes that I was reading on Sherdog, was that she's the only fighter to have eclipsed 200 significant strikes twice in her career in a three-round fight. So she's insane.
She's unbelievable.
So that is a flyweight record. And last week, you know, we did break some news, but Valentina Shevchenko versus Alexa Grasso was also broken for the co-main event for March 4th. So a big fight in the flyweight division coming up. Do you venture a guess, Kenny, on what the odds are for that on DK Sportsbook?
I'd say Shevchenko, probably like 5-1, 6-1?
Yeah, minus 600. That's why Kenny gets paid the big bucks.
Yeah, I rarely get those right, but I'll take it.
So just to continue along those lines, early line movement, John Jones, when the fight broke, was an underdog. He's now moved. He's now minus 120 for UFC 285.
Wow.
Quick line movement, some smart plays there. You know, I know I'm one of them, so I had to get on that dog money. More line movement, Kamaru Usman, the odds did come out on DK Sportsbook, minus 245 versus Leon Edwards, plus 205 for that rematch. Surprise there, John?
That's very interesting. Kenny, in terms of that trilogy fight between Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman, so Gilbert Burns is still working with Kamaru Usman a little bit here and there.
Oh, wow.
But Gilbert Burns this week in Rio was asked about that trilogy fight and who he thought would win it. And he said, with an argument largely rooted in the altitude in Salt Lake City, he's picking Leon Edwards because he said Leon Edwards got off to a great start in the altitude. Then he feels like that affected him in the middle rounds. And then obviously we all know what happened in the fifth round. But I'm so curious for our fighter meeting with Leon Edwards. So I can say, like, so I think we want to have that conversation. Like, why was the performance so listless in rounds 2, 3, and 4? Like, do you have answers internally as to why you couldn't get off at all for major portions of that fight? But I did think it was interesting that Gilbert Burns talked a lot about the altitude and went on record as saying he thinks Leon wins the third meeting.
That's very interesting, and that's totally feasible, because it seemed like he didn't have that same kind of spunk. He didn't have that same kind of energy moving around the octagon that you typically see from him. Footwork, huge part of the game, obviously. Huge part of the game for Leon Edwards, who is a very sophisticated fighter and has a lot of skills. So, something to think about.
Yeah, wow. I think so.
Well, and interesting too, because everyone wanted to jump right to Kamaru's outside of the octagon things to blame the law. You know, they're like, oh, he's not focused. He's going Black Panther, which comes out on Disney Plus in a couple of days, you know, cheap plug. Yeah. But interesting, interesting to say the least. Minus 245 on DK Sportsbook. So
yeah, I'm not sure I've ever been more interested to have a fighter meeting than when we sit down with Leon Edwards in England, just to try to get some answers as to how they felt about the totality of that fight.
Right. John, gun to your head, fish and chips or acai?
Acai, just because you're asking me today, but I'm a big fried food guy, so I don't know.
Yeah, we know, Chost, we know. Shout out, Jay.
Yeah.
So no Cody's cover this week, but if you watch Remember the Show, which we've had over 100 UFC athletes, and now have, you know, our first homegrown champ in Jamal Hill, you know, huge Remember the Show staple. I did give out Burns to win by finish in round one and the under 1.5.
That's right.
Walker versus Craig. So fade me at your own peril. I'm just saying.
Mero's on fire in the DraftKings Sportsbook. Got to get that going in Florida. All right, that is going to do it for this episode, but not for this week. As you know, the Anakin Florian podcast throughout 2023, not one, but two episodes a week. And our next episode will probably drop on the DraftKings YouTube channel on Thursday. Clips on our socials as well as the Anakin Florian podcast channel. Also, don't forget, Remember the Show is back this Thursday with Bilal Muhammad and Jason Anik, and we will be live later this week with Coach Santino DeFranco, Brian Petrie, as we continue the UFC 283 conversation and get to anything else that materializes in the MMA stratosphere over the next 48 hours. Thank you to our executive producer, Cody Merrill. Thanks to Ray Longo. For my man, Kenny Florian, John Anik signing off from Rio de Janeiro. We'll talk to you in a few days. Until then, yo fucking later.